Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check you're subscribed to the new feed, because the old one is going to go pretty soon, check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple, search the Nat Coombs Show, make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Another goodie coming your way. You might remember the books pod we did a couple of weeks back with Stig Abel recommending our favorite American sporting books. Well, it got us thinking, why stop there? Why not look elsewhere beyond literature to movies? And who else to get us into our favorite American sporting movies but an old friend of the show, somebody I've worked with a lot over the years, who's done so much for the NFL in this country. I am delighted to chat some celluloid goodness with the brilliant Vernon Kay. Vern, I've been looking forward to this pod more than anything else, I think, in the last week. When we were messaging each other last week and said, let's do a film pod. Yeah, brilliant. And that's all I've been thinking about.
Well, there's so many out there, aren't there? There are so many great sporting movies. And, you know, in particular, American football or football. Yeah. But there are several. The thing with sporting movies is they're all relatable. So it doesn't matter what level of sports fan you are, be it Caddyshack, it Mean Machine, or The Great Escape. All sports movies are relatable to sports fans because you understand the context in which the sport is used as a tool within the movie.
Yes.
You know, so The Great Escape, it's not necessarily about the football match.
Escape to Victory.
Yes, I beg your pardon. Escape to Victory.
Because The Great Escape could maybe sneak in. Yeah. You've got Steve McQueen with his baseball.
A little bit of baseball.
He's got his baseball, so I reckon that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of baseball in there, and a lot of target shoot practice.
Triathlon, yeah.
So sport is always used as an anchor for the main story. You know, and that's why I think sports fans love a good sports movie, because no matter what it is, whatever sport, the passion of that sport always flips over into the narrative of the movie.
Right.
Like, let's be honest, Adam Sandler has never made a good movie.
Oh, I disagree. Have you seen Uncut Gems?
That's not really an Adam Sandler movie, is it?
What do you mean?
He did it, but if you were to say Uncut Gems, is it a stereotypical Adam Sandler movie?
No, that's probably why it's good. Okay, so point taken.
I would imagine that Adam Sandler's quite gutted because he's gone into this serious acting role and he's been raised to a different level. You know what I mean? Like, his acting is phenomenal. And for years, he's been making these dreadful comedy movies.
Does he care when he's got raking in 20 million a film? I often wonder.
Hell no. And he shouldn't care because it works. And that's the beauty of it. I remember we were on Radio 1 and Adam Sandler came in and he was talking about that... what's it called? It's about the... I think it's the Palestinian hairdresser.
Zoltan, it's called. Something
about the Zoltan.
Yeah.
And he came in and instead of doing the junket, he very kindly came into Radio 1 and we had a chat. Mm. And it was in the early days of when Radio 1 had just installed cameras in the studios. So it was that birth of Twitter and social media and, let's put it out on the internet, this interview. So, yeah, great. And we did the interview, and at the end of it, he went, "Oh man, I was desperate to stop the interview because you are sweating like a fire hydrant. Look at the colour of your shirt and your armpits, man." I'm like, "But I just went with it, so that's cool." And I'm like, "Good, buddy."
Do you know what I was thinking when thinking of this? Like I say, it's all I've been thinking about when we were doing. Because a lot of our listeners will know, of course, you and I did Channel 4 together for a number of years. And so two things about this. So I was, in terms of movies, I was remembering this one time. I think it was the first year we were doing the highlight show at the sports bar. We remember we recorded it on location at the sports bar. And I rocked up and I just bought this ill-conceived in retrospect. I bought this orange puffer waistcoat, like it's a gilet, Vern. Which was very bright orange. And I walked in and we were doing this show, you'll remember, with maybe 100 fans were there as the kind of audience and we kind of record bits of different locations. Walked in, I think I was running late and we were waiting to get going. So the place was packed, the crew were waiting, everyone was waiting, kind of burst in. "Hey, sorry I'm late, how you doing?" you remember this? You just said, "Where'd you park your X-Wing, Nat?" What a line. I love that line.
That was a damn good gilet.
It was a great gilet. Sitting in the wardrobe.
But it just looked like Luke Skywalker just walked into the room after blowing up the Death Star with Han Solo.
That has always been our dynamic. It's my Skywalker to your Han Solo.
Let me just skip back. If there are any Adam Sandler fans listening and I've upset you, by not being a fan of some of his comedy classics, I apologize because I said something derogatory recently about Jack Black. Oh my goodness me. Unbelievable. And it was interesting. I got a handful of, the Richard heads like to jump on board on Twitter, shall we say.
Yeah.
And, the majority of them, 99% of Jack Black fans that came on my Twitter feed to support him, all had Star Trek, Star Wars, or Battlestar Galactica in their profile picture or profile banner.
Original Battlestar Galactica, or if you got the faces in, wasn't the face in Battlestar Galactica?
Benedict or something like that.
Dirk Benedict,
the face man. Yeah, so we're talking movies, and it's a shame that this is a podcast because, as you can see, Nat, I've come today as my kind of COVID lockdown hero, probably the greatest quarterback ever to appear in cinema, Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
You have come as Uncle Rico. So we're going to try and push some of this video out on social as well, but for all of you listening right now, I would describe, you've always had great hair, Vern, I think it's fair to say, but you've added the bit of facial hair to it as well.
It's difficult for me to grow, but because we're in lockdown, and we've taken lockdown very seriously, because it is a pandemic, and from the horror stories that we've heard from some of our close friends who've had COVID-19, it is horrific. It's brutal, and it's not to be messed with. So I know we've been told that we can go to work, don't go to work, stay indoors, go out and socialise. Trust me, from what we've heard from our close friends, and there's two or three of them who've had COVID-19, do not go out until it's safe.
Yeah.
Because it's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. Anyway,
well said.
Because you're locked down, I thought, I'm going to see how much of a beard I can actually grow, because I was always that kid. I didn't start puberty till sixth form. Do you know what I mean? So it was always difficult as a teenager for me growing up. Like, everyone's like kicking on 6'3" and I'm way behind with a voice like this.
Well, so that's interesting. So when, because you're tall, so when did you shoot up? Were you sort of 16, 17?
Yeah, it was the summertime between lower six and upper six.
Right, yeah.
And bringing it back to football, I'd just spent 3 weeks in Seattle with my uncle and auntie and cousins. And I went there, I think I was like 5'6", 5'7", and came back 6'4".
Bloody hell.
Yeah, no word of a lie, someone actually asked me who I was on the return to sixth form in upper six. I'll never forget that. Who are you? Like, it's me, you idiot. It's me, you idiot.
I'm an exchange student from Seattle. That's incredible. So was that when you got the bug for football when you went to Seattle, or was it before that?
No, I had it before that. And I just bought. I saved up. I was running two jobs at the time. One was packing bananas, and the other one was cleaning schools, summer holidays. And I had loads of spending money, and I blew it all in the first week in places like Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yep.
The Seahawks memorabilia shop. It just all went. I think I've got loads of rookie cards of Seahawks players past who you've never heard of.
Yeah. But I love those. I love that. I've got a stack of cards kind of kicking around, football, baseball. I like the periphery players that kind of maybe had a cup of coffee and bounced around for a couple of years. I think, what are they doing now? Sometimes I look them up. Like, I got given, I think, one birthday, a kind of stack of old, like a box of old baseball cards. And it's from a lot of 70s. So actually a lot of facial hair, quite similar to what I'm looking at right now, but to be fair. And what happened to this guy? What happened to Dirk?
I love it. Like, I was looking at, funnily enough, somehow, like Darren Fletcher, I do the fumble with, he's obsessed with memorabilia and merchandise. Mm. So we've been chatting regularly, and every day he pops up in a different Chicago Bears uniform. He's unbelievable. He must have a separate bank account that his missus doesn't see for memorabilia, because he's got like the best shirt. Apparel. He's very, very, very well dressed when it comes to sports apparel. and on the fumble, we were talking about a few bits and pieces, and we did this podcast, and it was when the Seahawks were over. Remember when they were saying and talking about old players and where are they now? I remember. You remember Jacob Green, the defensive end for the Seahawks?
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah. Well, we've got a storage unit, and it's just full of junk. And I'm a hoarder. I'll put it out there to the public. Like, I don't throw anything away. I like to keep stuff because I'm quite sentimental. And I found a stack of old. I must have been 13, so I don't know what the equivalent is now of school year. So I was 13, and all I used to back. Remember, you used to back your books?
Yeah.
I used to back my books in the centre spread of first down.
Oh, mate, that is uncanny. I did exactly the same thing.
Backing your books in American football posters. And one of them was Jacob Green. And we were set to interview Jacob Green and a couple of others at the Grove for the football. Great.
Yeah.
But I'll see if I can find that book. And I found it. Right. So then what I did, I reverted back to another box of memories that I've got, which was of my Seattle trip. Photographs, Seahawks memorabilia. I got a baseball cap signed by Dave Craig, Steve Largent.
Wow.
Other great players. And I found this annual. It must have been the pre-1990-91 season, like a yearbook. And Jacob Green had signed it, right? So I said, first thing I said to him was, Jacob, we've met before. He was like,
I'm glad he didn't try and style it out.
We've met before. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, we met in the summer of 1990 in camp. He went, no way. I went, yep. And to prove it, there's your autograph.
Oh, brilliant.
Right? And literally, the guy freaked out. Like, we had to stop for a second, and he's like, this is just too weird. I come to the UK, and I'm in the
Grove. And he's, that is incredible.
But I love doing that, what you said, of finding out where players are. And I did it recently with Mike Tomczak. Remember the backup quarterback?
Yeah, I do.
He's bounced around the league. He's now like an assistant coach in some high school.
Yeah.
And American footballers, I think business CEOs must love just having a former NFL player on the board.
Yes.
Because you see a lot of former players like, I'm now on the board of Technoelectric. Like, what the hell is that? Like, no one knows, all these companies that are so obscure, but the CEO just wants a former NFL player as a friend.
To play golf with, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. One of those weird jobs as well you see is, or regular jobs you see, which is always quite, strikes me as quite strange, is a greeter, or sometimes they're spun as like a PR guy for a Vegas, or if they're not quite as high profile, a Reno a casino. So yeah, that's obviously a kind of gig that a lot of ex-pros get. It's just, I guess, just kind of hanging around and talking to high rollers. And
oh, that's funny.
Life
yeah,
in Vegas.
That's what they must do. That's like my favourite player of all time, Ronnie Lott. I think that he's on the board of a couple of companies. So my facial get-up, getting back to the beginning of the story. Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. I just had a shower. That's why I was a little bit late. I thought, I'll leave it on.
Yeah.
Give it, style it out as the old Uncle Rico. I think it looked pretty cool.
Are you going to go further? Are we going Tom Selleck with the tash? Is that where we're heading?
I think I'm going to leave it at that. Mm. It's like I'm going to end up looking like blooming, I don't know, some of those actors that you might find on a VHS that's been thrown at the side of the road.
This is the worldwide leader, Bernard. We can't talk about that. Right. Speaking of movies, let's get down to business, because we got a ton. Frankly, I am sensing a recurring pod here, because there's no way we can cover all the sporting movies we want to talk about in one pod. Let's start with football, because we're going to look at American sports as broadly the catchment for today anyway, right?
Yeah.
But we'll start with football, as we are primarily a football pod. So where do you want to go? I think I know what your favourite football movie of all time is.
I've got two. One of them is Wildcats.
Okay.
It stars Goldie Hawn, a very young Wesley Snipes,
yep,
and a very young Woody Harrelson. Now, according to IMDb, this was the debut of both of those actors, but I'm pretty sure, movie debut, I'm pretty sure it was the actual movie debut of Wesley Snipes, but I think that Woody Harrelson had been in something before.
Was he in Cheers by then?
Yeah, he was the barman.
Yeah.
But I think as far as movie debuts go, I think it's Wesley Snipes' movie debut. And it's a really good the premise of the film is Goldie Hawn has been brought up as the daughter of a record-breaking football head coach. She's been taught football, she knows football inside out, and she's desperate for a job. She's the track athletics coach of some very posh high school, and she applies for the varsity football team coaching job. She doesn't get it. And then the regional director of sports says, yeah, but I know where there's a school that you can coach football. And she's like, yeah, great, I'll take it. And it's this downtrodden, urban high school in the middle of nowhere, you know, crime is high, blah, 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 blah. You know the stereotypes that are portrayed in the movie. And she takes the job, and the rest is history. And it's brilliant. It's got really bad jokes. The acting is, like, perfect Goldie Hawn movie. She's really funny, both physically.
She's great, isn't she? This was a Goldie Hawn sort of peak, movie peak,
yeah,
wasn't it?
I think she's a very, very underrated comedic actress in the way that she uses her body as well as her acting skills to tell a joke. Like, she's so funny.
Great physical comic. She started out on a show I think it must have been the late 60s in America called Rowan and Martin's Laughing, which was this kind of sketch show which was really ahead of its time, like really subversive, had a lot of... So do you remember the gag in The Simpsons when they talk about Donald Trump being president and everyone talks about that? They did the same thing on Rowan and Martin's Laughing years ago. I just saw a clip on YouTube because everything's on YouTube, where they kind of rock up and it's all kind of quite psychedelic because it's the 60s and they have heads popping up and they used to get massive stars in it. Like John Wayne, I remember John Wayne rocked up and did a line, just appeared out of nowhere. And I'm sure it influenced the Muppets and things like that quite a lot. John Wayne just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah, they had a collective of actors on that, didn't they? A little bit like Saturday Night Live.
Exactly. It was a real precursor to Saturday Night Live. And Goldie Hawn was one of them, right? And but they get, like Saturday Night Live, the biggest stars in the business doing guest spots on it. There's a one, and they just crop up as well. So John Wayne just suddenly appears. And at the time, he was, one of the biggest film stars in the world. And he did a line just saying something like, This guy once told me to shoot first and ask questions later. I was going to ask him why, but I had to shoot him first. stuff like this just appears out of nowhere. And they did a gag on it. President Ronald Reagan, and this is like in 1968, because I think Reagan had just got into politics and everyone's pissing themselves. And, you know, that was a precursor to the Simpsons gag. So that's where she started anyway. And she's terrific on that. So it's worth just finding some of that good stuff on YouTube. But Wildcats, 86, that is peak Goldie Hawn, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good. There's lots of innuendo, lots of football jokes, you know, kind of in-house football jokes as well.
Yeah. How good is the football action? Because that's going to come up.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's really terrible.
A lot better for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the continuity on this film is probably worse than any other movie you've seen. It's like they must have said, all right, guys, play football and then we'll do some pickups.
Yes.
So they played a game of football and then 5 weeks later, it seems, they did the pickups where the players are in different uniforms, wearing different coloured helmets. It's not even the same actor playing the position of quarterback, running back or wide receiver. It's horrendous. But because I was obsessed with football in 85, 86, when we used to go to the video shop, we used to always get Wildcats and the 1985 story of the Chicago Bears.
Nice.
And Crunch Time. The NFL hardest hitters on VHS.
Oh, yeah. Right. I've got to remember that whole NFL VHS series. I had a few of them. I think I had a burrito one.
And in our video shop, if you bought three, you got two for the price of three. Nice. So I think it was like £2.50 for three movies.
Yeah.
You know,
the good old days.
Yeah. And like, I think it was like, you know, my mum and dad would get something like Blues Brothers or On Golden Pond. and then we'd get these football.
Great.
And then we'd get these football movies that we'd just sit and watch over and over and over again. And I managed to find the actual VHS of the story of the Chicago Bears and the VHS of Crunch Time. So every now and again, I go into my kind of man shed, the gazebo in the garden, and put on a bit of Wonder Years, Chicago Bears 85,
a bit of
Crunch Time, and just sit there and kind of reminisce.
There is something you and I have spoken about so many times in the past. There's something so calming and warm about films made in this era. Like John Hughes, I guess, is the prototype and is the master of the genre, right? So pretty much anything John Hughes touched, it was representative of this. I was watching Ferris Bueller again the other day. My two boys for the first time watched it.
Really?
And it was, it's on Netflix as a 12, right? So I kind of figured, all right, well, it's kind of reaching a little bit for them, but they're old enough to get it. 12's fine. And, you know, we've seen the Avengers is a 12. Ferris Bueller's definitely a 15.
Is it the language? Because the only thing that I can think of in Ferris Bueller is the nurse that knocks on the door.
The nurse that knocks on the door.
Headache, fever, and a chill. Well, I've come round to restore your book because I'm a nurse and loves to.
It's definitely that. The other one I did the other day was Planes, Trains, and that is billed as a 15. I was watching it with my eldest, and I said, you know what, I'll keep a kind of keen eye because I can't think of anything. And, you know, there's the website, you'll know, as a dad, Common Sense Media, right? You look it up and just check, have I forgotten something? I thought, no, I know this film so well. Yeah, there's nothing. This is fine. It's Candy. It's Martin. We got to the car rental bit. that was quickly sped over. So, I dropped the ball out. But these films, and Wildcats is one of them. It is obviously not in the it's close to many John Hughes films, I guess, in terms of overall, your overall positioning of that era. But it's absolutely representative of that. And we've all gotten those films that we love that take us back. Here's one for you. We'll move on because we've got a ton to look at. Can you name the, as you've watched Wildcats apparently over 100 times, can you name the megastar rapper who has gone on to a pretty successful career in movies and is actually going to come up a little bit later on in one of the movies we're talking about, who appeared in Wildcats and he's credited as rapper?
Is it LL Cool J?
It is LL Cool J, yeah, there you go. Oh, LL Cool J, that must be his first movie.
Yeah, and the guy who, one of the main stars in it, who gets recruited as the new quarterback, who takes Woody Harrelson's character's place in that film.
Yeah.
The guy that played Bubba Gump. In Forrest Gump, he played Bubba.
I'm looking at 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, Wildcats.
Yeah. Like, if you're going to watch it after this, the full movie is on, the full movie is definitely on YouTube.
There's a lot, isn't there, that you can dig up on YouTube. All right, well, that's a great stick. Go and check it out. We'll push it out.
Yeah, and it's Mikelty Williamson.
Ah, nice.
He played Benjamin Buford, but he also played the main quarterback in Wildcats. Absolute classic.
I'm just love that.
Scroll down on it. There it is! Yes, 1986, Wildcats.
Let's roll to baseball. Wesley Snipes will kind of make that connection and talk Major League. So Major League came out in 1989 and did great business as well. I mean, it's a massive hit. And you had Tom Berenger, who only a couple of years before had been gunning for an Oscar in Platoon. So that's quite a jump for Berenger to rock up in Major League. Wesley Snipes was in it. Corbin Burnson of LA Law fame, who, looking into this more closely, they made a sequel, and then they also made Major League 3, and Burnson was the only original cast member to do it. All the others passed on that. So, loving that work from Burnson. And of course, Charlie Sheen, also in Platoon. So both Berenger and Charlie Sheen were both in Platoon and made that connection.
Very similar. Well, I would say very similar characters, but same characters within the movie. Yes. Tom Berenger, kind of the dominant, experienced father figure or leader,
the vet
in Platoon and Major League, and then Charlie Sheen. In Platoon, he's young and innocent, but in Major League, he's kind of the rock star, isn't he?
The rock star. He billed as a convicted felon on work release from a Californian prison.
Yeah,
I've forgotten that. Well,
most rock stars.
And of course, he is a pitcher that can bring the heat, can't he? And the success of the team starts to depend on Sheen bringing the heat. And it's a typical story of a hapless team that suddenly comes good and gets momentum when they shouldn't. And everyone thinks they're going to lose. And Wesley Snipes plays Willie Mays Hayes. There's also Dennis Haysbert, who rocked up as the president in 24, I think, years later, plays the... what's his name in it? Pedro Serrano, the voodoo practicing Cuban import with significant power, and quite a few scenes in the film that are so racially stereotypical, almost certainly wouldn't be made, wouldn't be allowed in a film now, but Major League got away with it 30 years ago. And seminal, of course, for Charlie Sheen, coming out to Wild Thing. This is his nickname, and when he comes onto the field, that's his music. And again, classic 80s movie has that final feel good, putting the hair on the back of your neck on end.
So those movies that we've talked about so far, Wildcats and Major League, I can't think in this day and age of streaming, you know, and binge viewing box sets of movies, I don't think there's a movie that I can think of that would fit in that category of just really tell the story, very funny, nice uplifting ending. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I can't think of one.
So we're talking John Hughes, right? I was watching Drillbit Taylor the other day with the kids, which, and I didn't realize that was John Hughes' last movie. He's on. Really? He didn't direct it, but he was, as the credits were rolling, his name rocked up. I think it's like a story credit, maybe he co-wrote it. He didn't direct it, but yeah, that was his last film he was officially officially billed on. And that, I remember watching that on a flight to the States, either for a Super Bowl or some or a game we were doing out there. And at the time, thinking, this is great. I hadn't really heard of it when it came out, and that reminded me. But I guess that because it had Seth, I think Seth Rogen was one of the directors and writers. So I guess that's looking back, and with Hughes being on the writing team. Those films that look back at that era, like deliberately looking, and I guess it's that generation, our generation in particular, that are influenced by those 80s and 90s films.
Oh.
Sometimes I think, mate, that are we falling into that trap of celebrating that era because it's the era that we grew up in and it was our formative years? Or is there, I like to think there's more to it than that, because I think people from different generations watch Ferris Bueller or watch Uncle Buck or watch Major League and completely resonate with, as you say, the feel-good factor of the film.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The feel-good factor. You know, I remember watching License to Drive.
What a film. Yeah, isn't it?
Goonies. Yeah. Monster Squad.
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. All great. Teen or pre-teen feel-good movies that were specifically targeted at that generation.
Yeah.
These days, you know, the movies that I kind of stumble upon because my daughters are watching it, it's just a lot of kids shouting at each other.
Yeah.
You know, and talking down to adults. You never get that in the 80s movies. 80s movies, adults or senior figures are treated with respect. Whereas nowadays, the movies that I've watched with our daughters, the adults are the ones that are picked on by the kids or talked down to by the kids. Not even like High School Musical. I think Disney does it well. But other movies that I've come across with our daughters, they're like, hang on a minute, you got to show respect to the elders.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't picked that up. Okay, Major League goes on our list then, in the sort of wildcard. Let's do a more serious film. Not saying it's a better film, but
Gandhi.
A type of film. Let's link Oliver Stone, which is jammily linking this. It looks like it's been prepared, but it really hasn't. But we mentioned Oliver Stone. Let's do Any Given Sunday, because
classic.
I think it is my favorite football movie. I think it's one of, I'll throw that out there. I think it is one of the best sporting movies out there. I do. And I think it's really underrated, because I watched it again. I was doing a piece on it quite recently, so I watched it again. I've seen it loads, but I hadn't watched it for a few years. Watched it again, and certain things really jump out. So it was made in 99, right? So over 20 years ago. It's completely stands up now. It doesn't feel, I mean, little bits feel a bit dated, but generally speaking, it doesn't feel like it's dated much at all. The football, unlike Wildcats, the football scenes in it are really, really on point, I think. And what I love about it is how completely on point the casting is. So you've got Pacino would be great in pretty much anything, right?
But yeah, that's a given.
I feel that's one of his, I'm not going to go as far as to say it's one of his best roles necessarily, but it 58-year-old, aging, grizzled coach with a drink problem and regrets. He just nails it. I think Cameron Diaz is really underrated in it. So she's the ball-breaking young team exec that's inherited it from her dad that wants to make a name for herself and move the team from Miami to LA. And she's great in it. And Margaret, old school, plays her mum, who's just drunk in every scene, which is great. Yeah. But it's hard to do a good drunk, and she does a good drunk really well.
And Margaret, who spent a lot of her more youthful years in movies with Elvis.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, what an incredible history. She might have been in... Was she the original Ocean's 11 as well, I think? Anyway, yeah, that kind of era. And then you've got James Woods as the doc. A really sort of morally ambiguous, sleazy doc. Perfect casting for him. I mean, all the way to LL Cool J is the running back with the ego that wants his bonuses.
The thing that does it for this... Let's cut to the chase. Let's get the elephant out of the room.
Yeah.
Right? Lawrence Taylor plays himself.
He definitely plays himself.
That's it. Lawrence Taylor plays himself. Lawrence isn't acting.
You know, certain films, certain directors just roll without any proper scripts and just they kind of role play it, but it's all kind of improv and see what happens. That's essentially what they did with Lawrence Taylor. And this Stone just said, just run at him and speak.
Is Michael Irvin in it?
Is what? Michael Irvin?
Yeah.
No, Terrell Owens is in it.
Terrell Owens.
Yeah. So Jamie Foxx is one of his first breakout roles as well. And it's one of the other things I love about it is just it's quite, without being pretentiously so, I love the way it's shot. It's in Miami and you get that side of it. And of course, we were out there not so long ago. God, it feels like a long time ago for the Super Bowl. But
yeah,
you got that. It kind of shows that glitz and the kind of art deco. We were saying, do you remember we were saying this at the Super Bowl? I was surprised how much I like Miami as a city. I mean, obviously I love the team, but I wasn't sure what I'd think about it spending a long time there now as an adult working there. And, I really liked it. I really liked the architecture of it, just the feel of it. You had the art deco stuff. You had that all the really exciting new stuff on the waterfront, the split of two different cities. I thought it was a terrific city. I was surprised I liked it so much.
Have you ever been on holiday there now?
Not for a long time. Only as a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Miami is a great place for a vacation, but especially if you've got a family, you've got to go a little bit further up.
Right.
You know, you've got to move up to kind of Boca Raton, I think it's called.
That
area up there. And then you can dip your toe into Miami. You know,
but not
Miami's a bit crazy. One Super Bowl, when was it? We were in Atlanta. And we were in the same hotel as David Moyes.
Yeah.
And David Moyes was telling us about when he took over at West Ham. And they used to go away on these trips, and they'd take the team away, you know, get isolated, bed themselves into an area, get involved. And he said that the team had booked the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami. And he thought, yeah, great, loads of facilities, loads of the grounds. He got there and he saw the hotel, and he just kind of, I know we're on a podcast, and I can't say his exact words, but he put his head in his hands and just said to himself, "Oh," and the lads got off and they were like, right, here we go. Let's get involved.
Hello, Miami.
They'd arrived in Miami to a hotel that had four nightclubs in it. And the training facility was literally across the road.
Because you need four, right?
Four nightclubs, not enough. In one hotel, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he said, all right, the best way to approach this is let them go out, let them go loose. So first night in Miami, he said, lads, get it out your system, off you go. But we will be training at 10 o'clock. And when I say training, trust me, we'll be training. So off you go. So some lads, he said, literally went from dance floor to kit room to the pitch, practice pitch. And he said, we gave them the hardest training session they've ever had in their footballing lives. And there were lads puking, bending, falling all over the place. And he said, after that, everyone was in bed at 10.
Really? Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Never
that's
again.
That's what Miami offers you. Miami offers you everything you could ever dream for. Some of the best golf courses in the world. The beaches are unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, Crockett and Tubbs are from there. What more could you ask for?
That is a complete city just for that reason. I was thinking of something then as you were talking. It's totally gone out of my head now.
But we've got to talk. If you're going to talk any given Sunday.
Yeah.
I want to know who wrote that speech and how many times it was edited.
Yes.
Because when you talk about that film, everyone talks about that speech. And that speech in itself is a standalone piece of audio that you can play many, many times. Many times, anywhere. Like you can play it to yourself pre-exams. You can play it to yourself pre-job interview. You can psych yourself up as, you know, first date.
Just before we start recording this pod, I dropped it just to kind of get me set.
There you go. You see, it's perfect. And I want to know, it'd be nice. I'm sure it's out there in this day and age. Everything's out there. But how many takes did it take to get it in the can?
Yeah.
How many times was it written? Had they stolen it from anywhere? I mean, I don't know. I've not researched it because I'd like to think that it was written and then just performed. Do you know what I mean?
I think if there's you can count on one hand actors where you would lay your house that that is probably what happened. And Pacino's one of them, right? If you think,
yeah.
He always wants to do it in one take, and Stone probably wanted to get it in one take because that's going to be a speech like that, the most visceral, the most raw, have the most energy. And I guess a great actor can bring it each time or most times and make it feel like the first time. But I reckon that if they could get it in the first time, I reckon they wanted to. I'm just looking it up now. I'm also, as I'm looking it up, wondering, you talk about how you use that, you can use that speech to motivate you in so many different ways. How many ill-judged attempts at that speech from business execs, teachers, just decided to go for it, load it, Tory MPs.
I remember being in the huddle, team huddle at the Warriors, and someone said, "Don't get mad, get even." I'm like, "Who are you, you idiot? No, what? Where have you got that from?" Like, the most commonly used phrase in sports ever. Don't get angry, get even. Like, shut up.
Oh, that's great. Was it, you reminds me of talking of Planes, Trains, when my favourite scene in Planes, Trains is when they're on the coach and they're all singing songs. And Steve Martin goes, "Okay, I got one. Three coins in a fountain. One of them," everybody just turns, some radio silence. And then Caddy drops, "Flintstones, meet the Flintstones," and everybody just. So that was his three coins in a fountain. Don't get mad, get even.
Yeah.
Right, let's go to Twitter because we got a ton of films from.
I saw that.
Yeah, loads. So let's rattle through a bunch and see what we're missing. So Field of Dreams came up. Now that is one of my all-time favorites as well, yeah. Because, and actually the listener who fired it in, I'm just trying to find, sorry, Haz, should have been prepared here.
Field of Dreams is Kevin Costner, right?
It's Kevin Costner. So Field of Dreams is based on a book where Costner plays a farmer in middle America who hears these voices, "If you build it, he will come," and builds a baseball field in the middle of his farmlands. Everyone thinks he's gone mad. And it's all about who does come. And there are lots of different, there's a supernatural vibe to it. I think it's often a little bit misunderstood as a slightly kind of sci-fi, crazy town film. And actually, I think it's a lot more to it than that. It's, again, a great cast. James Earl Jones is in it. He plays a reclusive writer. Ray Liotta's in it, who plays Shoeless Joe Jackson, who's part of the 1919 Black Sox team, the team that were banned from baseball, and he never played again. And the story is that he accepted the money to throw the World Series, but didn't really understand what was going on because he wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed. And if you look at his performance in the World Series, he batted, I think, the highest average on either team and played brilliantly and clearly didn't underperform, but he never played again. That's one of the great tragedies, I think, in American sports in his prime and was never forgiven. He's not in the Hall of Fame. So it's about redemption, really, the film. And it's not just them, although they're in it. It's the James Earl Jones character. And of course the father son dynamic between Kevin Costner's character and his dad. And that is a scene that just every time gets me. And that being a dad as well. Now I watch it. I mean, if you remember the scene in Ocean's 11, the remake, or Ocean's 12, when Brad Pitt rocks up at Clooney's, at Danny Ocean's door, and he says, have you been drinking and watching Oprah? Because Danny Ocean has been drinking wine and watching Oprah. That is my equivalent. Watching Field of Dreams, I will go every time. What's the movie that makes you well up every time?
Forrest Gump. I know it's not a sport movie. Well, no, yeah, there is. No, there's a, you know, I used to play for Alabama.
That's true. There is sport in it. Yeah,
there's football in it, you know. And yeah, I don't know. I just love the way that the story is told.
Mm.
And obviously the cinematography in that movie, Forrest Gump, is just epic. And the first time I watched it, I walked away just in floods of tears. Mm. And I went to watch it the following day on my own, because the first time was with a girlfriend at the time. And I was kind of like, pretending not to cry. So I went back the following day on my own, watched it again.
Yeah.
And it's been a regular on any device. Like, I've had it from VHS, DVD, downloaded it 1,000 times. It's just a damn good movie. And every time I watch it, I notice something different
something
I've never seen before. And you notice in Forrest Gump, what's very clever, they never say, they always ask the viewer the question, what was wrong with Jenny? And you see Forrest Gump's kind of, let's say, wife, you see her journey. So you think, did she die of cancer? Did she die of AIDS? Did she die of depression? How did she pass away? And it asks those questions all the time. Mm. And it really does tug at the strings. But then when you step away, you just think, that is a damn good feel-good movie.
Yeah. It's one of the greats. And Hanks is one of the greats, isn't he? I mean, we're talking about film stars that, he's up there, different kind of actor, but up there with Pacino, I think, is one of the all-time great film stars for sure. Here we go, Field of Dreams.
Sorry to interrupt. I've been fortunate enough a couple of times during the T4 days to interview Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And he is exactly how you expect Tom Hanks to be. He's everything you've heard about Tom Hanks. Courteous, very, very generous, opens a conversation, starts a conversation, which is really important, I think, for someone who's sat opposite a megastar like that. And there was always an unwritten rule in junkets when you sit down. It's like a conveyor belt of interviewers. So let's say you're the star. I would come in. Next minute, Dave Berry from Absolute Radio would come in. Chris Miles from Radio X would come in. And you get all these people coming and interviewing the star of the movie. And Tom Hanks, there's an unwritten rule in junkets that you don't ask for autographs and don't get them to sign memorabilia. Mm. And because I literally fell in love with Forrest Gump, I thought, do you know what? I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him if he'll sign something. And I got him to sign just a DVD cover of Forrest Gump. And he put on it, and it's up in the office. It says, "Hey, Vernon, congratulations on the gig." So it must have been one of my debut interviews on TV.
Right, right.
"May your success and shine and star shine forever." How cool is that?
So cool.
That's class. It's absolute class. And one thing that Darren Fletcher and I's last trip to, it wasn't Miami, I think it was in Minnesota. Mm. And when you're on a trip with Darren Fletcher, as we mentioned earlier on, you have to go merchandise shopping. So Darren will Google every merchandise shop in the city that the Super Bowl is being held. So we went on this tour of merchandise shops, and Darren's looking for something specific. I walk away with an Alabama 44 Gump jersey.
Oh, I love it.
It's a classic.
It's great to hear that about Tom Hanks as well. There's a brilliant book about Saturday Night Live. Speaking of Saturday Night Live, as we did earlier, which is an oral history of it. So it has everybody that was ever involved with it, apart from Eddie Murphy. He's the only person that didn't contribute, but everyone else, Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd in those, golden years, and then Will Ferrell and that crew later on. And typical oral history, you get different perspectives of the same incident, right? So you hear this particular season or this episode of this season and, or this guest host and, from the writers, producers, actors in it, kind of smash cutting between their perspective. And there's a chapter on Hanks, or at least Hanks, because he's a regular guest host on it, appears in it. And everyone, to a person, said exactly the same. They said, he's there till 3 a.m. writing. They need pizza at 3 a.m. I'll go and get it. Just like the biggest stars of his generation.
It's so cool. So cool. One of my favorite interviews that I've done. And after, I think it was for the Polar Express, the animation that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't really an animation. It was, what do they call it when you put on those suits and you've got that, it's like an animatronic type thing.
It was CGI.
Video capture, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Video capture. So I think that's what Polar Express was, video capture. Mm. And after that, another mad one, this T4 stuff that we did was just bonkers. We did a junket for, what was it? The film that was about Leonardo da Vinci.
Da Vinci Code?
Da Vinci, yeah!
That'll be the one.
Yeah, well done, the Dan Brown book. Yeah. That's it. The Da Vinci Code. Well done, that.
Thanks, man.
Touché. Yeah. That's a classic. So listen to this. This is when movie companies had money, right? When they had cash. Mm. The junket for Da Vinci Code, we were told to be on platform, let's say 3, at Waterloo at 7:30 in the morning for the junket. So we get on, and let's say it's Warner Brothers. I don't know which movie house it was, but they hired a whole train to take all the media, including the stars of Da Vinci Code, down to the south of France where the movie was going to be the opening movie for the Cannes Film Festival that year.
Wow. So what
we get on the, train, you get given breakfast, then you get given a time slot for each actor that you're going to interview. So you've got, I think it's, it was the guy who played Leon.
Luc Besson was the director, wasn't he? I know who you mean.
Jean Reno. Jean Reno. You got Tom Hanks, obviously, and it was directed by your fella from the Fonz.
Oh, Henry Winkler.
No!
Ron Howard.
Hey! Yeah, and so I walked in, and that morning, I mean, the media just absolutely blew everyone to bits because it got panned. It got absolutely slated.
I remember,
in the critical reviews. And it was going to open the Cannes Film Festival. So Ron Howard is sat there with Tom Hanks. And originally we were supposed to do the interview separate. So it's Tom Hanks and then Ron Howard. But because of the reviews, Tom Hanks had taken it upon himself to sit next to Ron Howard. And you did them both together. And I remember walking in, and this is absolute class. This is the level of star that Tom Hanks is. I don't think he can get more air up his backside after this interview.
I don't think you can. Right.
So I walk into the carriage, you know, bubbling along. I've got my daft haircut, thinking I'm Liam Gallagher, probably wearing a pair of Clark's Wallabies and some baggy jeans. I sit down and Tom Hanks says, "Hey, Vernon, how are you?"
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, that's class.
Oh, man. Come on. And he turns to Ron Howard and he said, "Ron, don't worry. We're going to have a great interview. This guy's awesome."
Ah, you must have been on cloud nine, man.
I'm like, oh my God. So not only did he have me in the palm of his hand, so courteous, but also he'd managed to relax and feel at ease with Ron Howard, who'd obviously been had some absolute abuse from previous journalists. Mm. And you just sit there and you think, what a dude. What a guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Great story. Just, getting, as you say, getting everyone calm, positive, happy with one saying one thing. Yeah, a legend. Oh, that is great. That is a great story. Great to hear because he comes across like that. And, you know, sometimes they say don't meet your heroes, right? But it's good to do it sometimes. Let's rattle through a couple on here.
Yeah, apologies. We digressed.
We really have. And, I said at the top, this will have to be a series. So, all right, I'll go through a few. We'll do kind of one-liners on a few of them because there are tons, right? So, but Field of Dreams, I say, that is definitely one of my all-time favorites. So Draft Day. Draft Day came up a few weeks ago, with Matt, when Marek Lard was on the show. Marek wasn't a huge fan of Draft Day, but.
I've not seen it.
Oh, okay.
I've not seen it, but it's on the list of things to watch on my travels because, if a movie like that, I don't like watching movies at the time that they're put out because I think the reviews are still at the back of your mind.
Mm.
So with my dodgy memory, I've completely forgot of people's opinions of Draft Day. So I'll go back to it with a clear and open mind and I'll make my own decision of the film. Do you know what I mean?
I will not take that perspective either way. Then I will keep shim. Yeah. I'm not saying a word of it. Oh, there's
that's
a whole.
That's why I can have my opinion on Adam Sandler movies, you see.
Just wait, the Sandler spate of that. I can't believe you didn't like Uncut Gems. All right.
I did like Uncut Gems. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I thought the end, no spoilers, the end blew me away.
Yes, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And I think his performance is epic. And what I was getting at was all those daft comedy movies.
It's not a conventional Sandler movie, yeah.
Just for sure that he has got it in his... in his locker,
a superb
actor.
Yeah, I think there's certain actors like that as well that we're digressing again, but you wonder, like, I wish Chevy Chase had been cast in a really dark role, you know, sort of as a baddie, but not in a kind of throwaway
cable
fashion.
Guy.
Cable Guy, yeah.
He would have been awesome at Cable Guy.
Cable, that's a great shout. Because Robin Williams did it, didn't he? Robin Williams had the, whatever it was called, one-hour photo booth or whatever, you know. Oh, yeah. And also, the Pacino movie did as well. The movie he did with Pacino, which is set in Alaska. You know, the cop movie where he plays a baddie and Pacino's the cop who's after him?
Okay.
Serial killer, that's it, yeah. I can't remember the name. Insomnia, it might be called Insomnia.
We could do a thousand podcasts about Robin Williams. That guy was
genius. It really, really was. And I mean, again, we're talking, going full circle to what we were saying at the top, but the of the show, that era of 80s and early 90s feel-good movies. Good Morning Vietnam, I mean, and again, talk about ad-lib. I mean, how much of that was ad-libbed? I mean, I reckon pretty much all of the stuff he was doing in studio there was just, Robin, you got 2 minutes, just take it away. All right, we've got James. At the NC show, by the way, is how you get in touch with us on social. Major League is in my top three all time. Fair play. Remember the Titans, he suggests. Remember
great the film. Titans. Great film. Yeah. That's one of those films that's always on Sky. It's a movie. Yeah. Remember the Titans.
Right. Do you remember Ryan Gosling in Remember the Titans? What's the Gosling back line? Five player of the week, 5 weeks in a row, or just, what's the line? Gosling line. Yeah.
Ryan Gosling's in it. There's quite a few big actors that are in that movie. Obviously, Denzel Washington's in it. A great role. Great authoritarian. Great football coach. And am I right in saying it's a true story? Or is that...
Yes, it is. No, that's right. Yeah.
And it goes through the racial unrest in the 60s. It's a great movie.
Absolutely. Absolute lockstep with you on that one. With that, Denzel Washington is, again... once in a generation kind of actor and brilliant in that role. Who do you think you as a player, and you played for years, of course, for the Warriors, which coach would you respond to more? Pacino in Any Given Sunday or Denzel Washington in Remember the Titans?
The Denzel character.
Would you?
Yeah, because I think the way that character coaches football, if you watch it over and over again, he's coaching life lessons.
Mm.
He's guiding the young men through what society is all about, what it's like in the big bad world, by bringing black players and white players together in what was single race schools, no, multi race school. He's preparing them for everything off and away from the football field, and that's very clever. And I think from my experience playing football under Tony Allen, who's now the chief exec of the NFL Academy. There is no one better to be in charge of the academy because that's what Tony Allen's like.
Yeah.
He's coached, on every level of football, British American football, European. He's a defensive line coach, I think, for the London Monarchs.
Mm-hmm.
He was head of NFL International Player Development for 15 years. So he knows what players are like. He knows, and he can integrate that with life, you know. And even though he calls people bodies, I need more bodies. I think he's an absolute class act.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah,
he really is. He is. I mean, you obviously know him really well and played with him. But every time I've interviewed him and spent time with him, I think that is exactly the phrase I'd use. He's a class act. All right, two more, and then we better get out of Dodge. The Natural with Robert Redford says Cattle Horan.
Never heard of that.
The Natural, that's a great film. Again, it's got a kind of supernatural vibe.
Hang on,
baseball movie.
The Natural?
The Natural with Robert Redford.
Right.
Made in the 70s, and it has...
He wasn't ugly, was he, Robert Redford?
He could handle a camera, Robert Redford. Robert Redford's like 86 years old, and he still looks better than most people.
Yeah, dude.
Also, he says, Cathal says, has to be an honourable mention for Rocky, and especially its reincarnation as Creed. What's your favourite Rocky film, Vern?
Oh, that is the million-dollar question.
I reckon it's 4. I reckon you're a Rocky 4 guy.
Rocky 4 with Drago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, liked it. I think, I'll be honest with you, I think my favourite Rocky film, because we get a true sense of what Stallone was trying to get across, is Rocky 1.
Yeah, right.
I think Rocky 1... because it's raw, it's shot in Philadelphia, in those meat factories. For a kid, when I first saw that, that kind of sparked off my love for all things Americana.
Really? One of the key moments in, that's interesting.
Yeah, because America had always been in movies to me. It had always been palm trees, crashing oceans, beautiful scenery. But when you see it from that perspective, you know, the downtrodden back streets of Philly, all the railway yards, the grime, people proper working for a living.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, oh, wow, America's very similar to Bolton. Well, Philadelphia is very similar to Bolton, isn't it? You know, people putting in some graft.
It's a great point you make, though, because I think that's right. I think we've talked about this a lot, that the love of America, it came from this Technicolor thing appearing, and NFL definitely, but in so many ways. And you mentioned earlier on that, and this, I remember the point I'd forgotten earlier on I wanted to make. When we were growing up and we had four channels, five channels, didn't have Sky, or most people didn't have Sky, didn't have the internet, obviously, or YouTube. Often a lot of the films that we're talking about just appeared. They were on at sort of 10, 15 at night, and that's what you got to watch. And that was it. And I think we've lost that. I think there's so much choice now that I think things can get lost. And I think it's maybe one of the reasons why the style of movie has changed a little bit too. All right,
a quick football reference, right?
Yeah.
In Rocky,
yeah.
Even though he's from Philadelphia, why is his dog called Butkus?
Butkus, I know. Yeah. Unbelievable. And can you tell me what his turtles are called?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good pub quiz question.
Yeah. Mike Carson asked me this the other day and I didn't know the answer.
Go on.
They are called, I've forgotten. So I've got Cuff and Link.
Nice.
Yeah. Cuff and Link. You know Stallone, I'm sure you'll know this story, but one or two of the listeners might not, wrote Rocky, right? And insisted he wanted to play Rocky, and he got offered a deal, like a buyout, and refused to sell the script unless he was cast as Rocky. So really held out when this was his breakthrough thing. He was a struggling actor, hadn't got anything going for him. He was offered a serious amount of money for the script, but we're going to cast someone else. We want to cast someone else to play Rocky.
He's been doing some amazing Instagram, not lives, but answering fans' questions on Instagram.
Stallone.
Yeah, Stallone. And there was one, and it was talking about, you know, obviously he's ripped and he was getting jacked. But he was saying that, I think it was Rambo, he got his body fat percentage down, or it might have been Rocky 3, to 2%. That's so dangerous.
And
he's saying to stay ripped and lean, he just keep taking these little carbohydrate cookies that were like this big and just popping them every 5 minutes to keep his like energy up. Like imagine that, 2% body fat. Like Bruce Lee apparently got down to 1.5% body fat.
Bloody hell! Stallone, he's been at the top of his game for a while since Rocky, right? So what,
40
years? But if you weren't around in that era, when in the 80s, it was, you know, him and Arnie were just, I mean, they're just absolute megastars. Where are you on Cobra, the Stallone?
I think my only quirky Stallone film that I like is Over the Top.
Lincoln Hawk, Over the Top.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like the fact that he was a lorry driver. My dad was a truck driver.
Ah, no way.
Yeah.
Lincoln Hawk. God, I haven't thought of Lincoln Hawk for a while. All right. Last one from our listeners, because there were so many that came in and I wanted to throw out a few because I massively appreciate it. There's a lot of love for Bull Durham, which we haven't talked about. So we talked about other baseball movies, and it's one of those films. I'll throw this out there. This is my Jack Black moment for you, Vern.
Right.
Everybody loves Bull Durham. Every time there's a list of the greatest sporting movies of all time, Bull Durham. Now, I'm not going to go as far as to say I think it's a bad film, but it just doesn't do it for me in the same way pretty much all the other films we've talked about, including Cobra.
I get it.
You with me?
Yeah, I get it. No, I think that's what's good about, it's a silly statement, but that's what's so good about movies, is that everyone's got different opinions of
totally agree.
What's a good movie and what isn't a good movie. Like, one of my favourite movies of all time is Convoy.
Convoy?
Chris Christopherson.
Yeah, I was thinking of Duel. Where is it?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of.
What's Convoy?
It's basically Chris Christopherson is a truck driver traveling from East to West Coast America, built a reputation as this kind of dude, and then an incident happens in a truck stop where it all kicks off, and Ernest Borgnine is the guy who plays policeman. So you know what kind of story it is.
Yeah.
And they're then on the run, and this massive convoy of trucks is formed, and then the rest is history. It's a great film.
I will look that up. I'll write that in turn. I'll knock that one down. Convoy, never seen that. You're right. That's the great thing, is films do polarize, and you can discover stuff all the time. And that's, I guess, the point of this pod. We've gone through films that I'm sure a lot of our listeners will have seen, but there'll be a lot of films we talked about that a lot of our listeners won't have seen. So go and discover them. Look them up. Enjoy them. We've got to do more of this because there are about 8,000 films we haven't even thought about. We'll re-up this one another time. Just quickly before we let you go, mate, you mentioned the pod, the fumble, earlier on with you and Fletch. That's going strong. All good there?
Yeah. We do it on and off, you know, because we do it for ourselves. So whenever we feel the need to just open up the mics, we just let it go. And it's been so much fun. And what I've loved about it is, like, Darren is obsessed by facts and stats. Obviously, when he's doing his BT Sports and he's commentating on the Premier League or the Champions League, he's got to have facts and stats readily available. And I think he's got some... He must be a member of some secret kind of group of people that just find statistics and bury them and get rid of them. Like, they must be a government agency and it's like, oh, we can't release this.
You said Fletch is in the Illuminati.
Like that. Yeah. Like the Freemasons of statistics. Okay. And he comes out with these numbers and you think, oh my God, they're unbelievable. And he's like, yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I'm obsessed by his obsession, obviously, as we've heard throughout this podcast. His obsession with memorabilia is like next level. I thought I was obsessed by weird and quirky pieces of memorabilia or merchandise, but Darren is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Love it. Fumble is available on all good podcatchers, so go and check that out.
Hang on.
All right.
We cannot stop Nat talking movies, right? We haven't mentioned my favourite. I said there were two.
You did? I'm remiss of me. Yeah, okay. So there was Wildcats. What's the other one?
Mean Machine with Burt Reynolds.
How could I?
Come on!
Holding my head in shame. I thought when you were dropping the tash at the top, I thought it was, I'm Selleck. I should have obviously gone Reynolds, right? That's
Uncle Rico.
Uncle Rico, so Mean Machine, yeah. Educate our listeners on
Mean Machine is about this guy, all-star quarterback who hits the bottle, gets arrested, gets put in a slammer. But he gets put in a specific slammer because the guy who is in charge of this jail runs a semi-professional football team. And he wants Paul Crewe, which is the Burt Reynolds character, to play quarterback for a team of prisoners to test the mettle of the team of guards. And the rest is history. And it's got some great, great cast members. So Burt Reynolds is in it. Richard Keel, who played Jaws, is in it. Remember him?
Yeah, from the Bond films, yeah.
Yeah. Ray Nitschke is in it, who played for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, right.
You've got loads of footballers who we won't know, so I won't name them. But it's rinsed with professional football players.
So it's basically Escape to Victory.
Kind of.
Had a lot of pros in it as well, and that had the prison guards versus the players. It's got that kind of vibe.
And like the football version that came out after with Vinnie Jones is nothing compared to the American football version of The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds. And I know they did a remake with our dear friend Adam Sandler.
Yeah, yes, they did. That's also not on your favourite list.
It doesn't compare to the original with Burt Reynolds. What an absolute god. And Burt Reynolds played college football, and I think he was drafted by the Indianapolis Colts.
Did Reynolds play football? Was Reynolds in a sitcom? Is that a sitcom that he was in? Was that based on, you know what I mean, the 80s?
I'm sure Burt Reynolds used to play or was a professional footballer. Yeah.
What was the sitcom he was in? Do you remember it? So, because when he did Mean Machine, talking to Goldie Hawn earlier, and her apex, I guess, of her career was exactly when she made Wildcats. That's the same. Reynolds was the biggest star in Hollywood in the 70s, right? When they made Mean Machine. But then he made a sitcom.
Here we go. He attended Florida State University on a football scholarship and played halfback.
See, I think that's important. A lot of people say this about Costner as well, that one of the reasons why, if you think about all the sporting films Costner's made, so Field of Dreams, we mentioned, in Bull Durham, Draft Day, although he's the GM in that. Tin Cup is another one. He's just a really credible athlete, Costner. You cast him and you got to believe he's, it's like casting you, Vern. Like, if you cast you in a film, you'd be credible, particularly with the touch. But you think, okay, this guy, I can believe it. Whereas maybe that was one of the, like, with Varsity Blues, was that one of the issues with Van der Beek, with Dawson, that you just didn't quite buy him as a, as a quarterback.
Don't mention Dawson's Creek. That was the bane of my life for 6 years.
The bane of your life?
Yeah, when we was on T4.
Religiously.
I think it was only on for the first 2 years of my T4 career. But oh my goodness me. I just didn't get it at all. But because
You had to watch it.
So because we were live, and in case we had to fill and chat about the program that was either coming up or the program that had been on before,
yeah,
we had to have extensive knowledge about Hollyoaks, Dawson's Creek, The Simpsons, Pop World, all the shows that were on. They made us watch regularly. I'm like, oh, Dawson's Creek. I just didn't get Dawson's Creek at all.
Everyone talked very, very fast all the time, and they talked like they were 45-year-old professors from Harvard, teenagers, whatever they were.
Very strange show.
Let's end it on Evening Shade. That was the Bruce, the Burt Reynolds sitcom from the 80s, where he played a former professional footballer in that as well. Woodrow Wood Newton retires to his hometown of Evening Shade.
Oh, okay. There you go.
90s sitcom, to be precise. There you go. So dig that out as well. Yeah. On the Reynolds tip. Loving your work, bud. It's great to go. I was looking forward to this, and I knew it would be a lot of fun, and absolutely lived up to the hype. So appreciate that, man. As I say, The Fumble, go and check that out on all good podcatchers. It is also a lot of fun. Look after yourself, man. Come and check it soon.
Yeah, love to the family.
Likewise, mate. Take care. See you soon, bud. Lovely stuff from Vern. There are so many more movies that we didn't even think about, let alone the ones we just scratched the surface, that we will have to go back. We'll have to do another one. I spot a sequel. I spot a franchise. We will be doing more movie pods. You can guarantee it. I hope you're enjoying these extra pods that we are doing over the lockdown period. We're going to keep them coming thick and fast. Some terrific guests lined up over the coming weeks. If you haven't heard it already, Neil Reynolds dropped by for a pod earlier in the weeks ago, and check that out. Download that. And if you haven't already, make sure wherever you're listening to us, you subscribe so you won't miss a trick. Thanks to Bird. We will check in with you very, very soon. Take care for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.